Hello, guys, and welcome back to Pick Me, Choose Me, Podcast Me, where we are breaking down Season 1, Episode 6 of Grey's Anatomy, If Tomorrow Never Comes. Just be warned that this is a spoilers podcast. Also note that we are not doctors yet, or nurses yet, but we are people who are passionate about Grey's Anatomy and healthcare. If you are new to this podcast, hi, hello, welcome. Please subscribe and rate us on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts, because it does mean a lot to us. It's just me today, me as in Haley, and Shayla.
Hello. Also, I'm not part of the doctor yet or nurses yet group. I'm just one of the passionate about Grey's Anatomy ones.
Yeah, she's a journalist and social media person, so that's where she comes in as well, along with the actual film making, because she knows all that legal and copyright shit that I know nothing about.
Yeah, know a little bit about copyright, also some stage production, film production.
Yeah, Shelby's not with us because she's currently moving in with me in the city where Shay had moved out. So school's about to begin for me and Shelby, and she's getting a head start in things because she's starting at the hospital before we start in classes. So she's got to get a jump on things. Unfortunately for me, they took away our public transportation, so I spent this week refurbishing my bike, learning how to bike in a city, and doing all that crap.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because, I mean, although I'm not envious of those going back to school in the COVID kind of test trial semester, I do miss the fall back to school feeling. Like, that was always my favorite part of the year, and this is the first time in over, like, 16 years that I won't be going back to school this fall.
Yeah, it's a crazy feeling.
Yeah.
Well, and the weather just kind of sucked in general this summer. I don't know what it is with 2020. It's just been a bleh year. Like, it feels like fall already. Our summer is well over in Alberta. Like, the summer weather's gone. It ain't coming back. Like, I wore long sleeves the other day.
Yeah, we had like a maximum of 3 weeks of really nice weather. The rest of summer was like super rainy, which is very unfortunate considering it was probably the summer we've been home the most and spending the most time outdoors and just kind of doing whatever or going camping because of COVID, and there's not really many other activities to do. But here's to what the weather forecasters are predicting to be a god-awful and very, very, very cold winter.
Yeah, and this, as a rural Alberta citizen, I guess, I don't know. I'm from rural Alberta, if you can't tell from my very hick rural Alberta accent with the long drawn out ers. The crops suck. Harvest sucks. All the hay is damp and nobody can get it off the fields. So 2020 sucks for everybody, including farmers. So that's kind of our two cents on current events,
right? Well, should we get right to it then? I just wanted to say that, like, the start of this episode, pretty much all the way up until the intro music, because there's still the intro theme song at this point. Nobody knows where we might end up. That was a really horrible singing rendition of it. So don't download that as your ringtone or anything else. But basically every part up to that, I really enjoyed. The George spilling coffee on himself in the morning. I've had a really long day today, just a really long work day. Like, worked all day, had to go home, take my cat to the vet, and then I had to go back to work this evening. So I was kind of, like, exhausted.
Oh, not to mention, like, emotionally exhausted because your cat is like sad because she's just like staring blankly at walls slash running into walls. But I've never seen a poutier cat wear a cone.
Yeah, she's only like 4 or 5 months old at this point, and she needed some eye drops, so it's nothing serious. But the vet gave her a cone and she's not happy about it. So all that. Anyways, in a roundabout way to say, George spilling coffee on himself made me laugh, and it just made me happy. Like, that whole interaction with him and Izzy in the morning and everything else, and the way that Meredith is just like, crap, 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 and Derek's like, what? And like, he's just his flirty, usual self. The banter, it's great. Even yeah. Christina and Meredith, when they're getting changed, and Meredith's like, I can't get kicked out of the program, right? And Christina's like, well, technically.
Oh, yeah. And like, with the Meredith, O'Malley bringing Meredith coffee, I think it's cute. And I've definitely done this before. Like, when I'm bringing Timmy's home for, like, one of you guys or Kenny, and I've also got groceries or my hockey bag, and I'm trying to open the door without spilling everywhere because I refuse to take more than one trip from my car. Yeah. Even though the garage is close to my house, I don't want to have to do it twice. Who wants to take two trips of groceries, you know? So, like, I get it. I've done that before, and I've spilled it all over myself. Yeah. I remember one time I got so mad. I walked in the door and you're like, you didn't bring me a coffee. I'm like, no, it's on the floor of the garage.
Yeah, I remember that. I was just about to recount that scenario. And then I was sad because I was out of coffee, but you were a little more peeved.
The entire side of my car was just splashed with coffee. And I am like, I didn't feel like going to the car wash because it was also the week where it was like minus 30. And I didn't want to go wash my car because I knew my doors would freeze shut. So, you know, I've done this before. And not to bring the mood of the O'Malley scene down, but at 2:15, O'Malley says, I'm not dying. I had no more comments on that line.
What? I didn't pick up on that, him saying, I'm not dying.
Yeah, it was when he was chatting with Izzy, and he's like, it's not like I'm dying.
Oh.
Yeah, so do we want to? I have kind of a few intro comments, sure. But I kind of tied them into the notes with my characters.
Yeah, let's just go through the way you have it, character by character, okay. And I'll add my two pieces in.
So I did actually arrange my notes a little differently in this case because it's so entwined, like the medical cases.
Mm-hmm.
Can I cover some of the medical cases before we get into the character stuff?
Yes.
Okay, so there's three patients that are the focus of this episode. So for patient number one, before they go in, Bailey provides them a warning not to laugh, which I think was good of her, but it also shouldn't be necessary for medical professionals. You should know not to laugh at your patients and their suffering. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I can't judge. Maybe they need a little bit of dark humor to get through a stressful job, but they also haven't been surgeons for that long. So this patient has a tumor the size of, what, a large pumpkin? No, a large decorative rock? It's the size of a beaver. It, like, the unit of measurement, my fellow Canadians should understand, this tumor is one beaver large. For my non-Canadians, it's like a fat corgi, I'd say.
Fat corgi? Awful. Are you going to name it Cheddar?
Cheddar. Cheddar the tumor.
That's a Brooklyn Nine-Nine reference in case somebody doesn't watch that.
So, obviously, seeing this patient, I had to look up the world's largest tumor. Are you ready for this?
Mm-mm.
I don't think you're ready for this. This tumor in this episode is nothing. It's absolutely nothing. According to BBC, the largest tumor that was ever removed intact was a multicystic mass on the right ovary of a 34-year-old woman, and it weighed 137.6 kilograms, which is 303 pounds.
This poor woman, she was probably like considered chronically morbidly obese.
Yep.
And by like, and it wasn't even her fault. It was a tumor.
Oh, yeah. And wait for it. It was removed by Dr. Catherine O'Hanlon, little girl, a professor at Stanford University Medical Program in 1991. They say the patient and the cyst each left on a different stretcher. And just for reference, the patient weighed 95 kilograms or 210 pounds after the surgery. So this tumor was heavier than her entire body mass by almost 100 pounds. At over 500 pounds before the surgery, I'm going to assume that the walking situation wasn't great. But now this woman has her entire life back. Like, she's really young, so I'm imagining she had a good recovery. I didn't see much on her recovery, but isn't that insane?
Yeah, now she can probably, like, actually walk or do other activities, anything she wants, really, that she wouldn't have been able to do before.
300 pounds. So, talking about the case in the show, Annie Connors is 43 years old, who had worsening shortness of breath over the past 3 months. She has a large tumor of unknown origin pressing against her diaphragm. The diaphragm is a part of the cardiovascular system, which is why Dr. Preston Burke is on the case. The diaphragm is a large muscle that sits just below your lungs and heart and contracts when you inhale. And the diaphragm, for reference, is what causes the hiccups. So hiccups are just spasms of your diaphragm. Anyways, the patient is stable and scheduled for CT.
Fun fact, I pulled a muscle once right next to my diaphragm. So every time I breathed, the pulled muscle pulled. Oh, that sucks.
Mm-hmm. How'd you do that?
I think I was sleeping. But luckily, my chiropractor figured it out.
Well,
I thought he really, really helped me after a couple sessions. Well, walk again.
You're going to say that it was like when you were doing synchro or you were swimming or doing like something like.
No, I think that was at the point where I was, like, sleeping funny. I also think it was during, like, final season, too. So it could have been, like, the fact that I was sitting in my chair slumped for a long time.
Yeah, that would be it. Patient number two is very kind of brief in this episode. He's Mr. Harper, who had a coronary bypass the previous day. The only time we see him this episode is with Izzy Stevens at the very end. So we'll return to him later. Patient number three, Edward Lavangi, and he is a patient of Dr. Shepherd. He's a 63-year-old man admitted for pain management for kinesia. Kinesia is the muscle movement experienced by Parkinson's patients. As we see later in this episode, his daughter wants further treatment more than just pain management because she wants her dad to walk her down the aisle. That's all my... quick summary. I felt like I was doing rounds. I felt a little bit like the interns.
That's good. That's what we should call, or this part of the podcast from now on, perhaps. We'll give a case by case rundown quick about which patients are going to be tackled in the episode. So we're not as confused if some of us haven't watched the episodes recently.
Okay. Who do we want to start with? You want to start with Meredith?
I don't know. Sure. Let's start with Meredith.
Okay. Let's start with Meredith. Meredith's always a good place to start, you know? Mm-hmm. So when Meredith gets to work and spots Derek, she doesn't know what to do about her relationship because it compromises her professionally. And I mean, I just love how confident Derek is in his feelings for her. But I guess it also comes from a position of power. Like, he's not the one who's, like, threatened professionally by the relationship, but...
Meredith's reaction seems so real life to me. Mm-hmm. Like, that's exactly how I'd be reacting in a scenario. Because I'd be like, oh, I really want to be with you. And you're super cute. And we have great attraction for each other. But also, I don't know what to do because this is my job. And this is my life right now. And just the way she's like, crap. Yeah. And then just can't formulate what she wants to say.
It's like, oh my God, my career I worked my entire life for. But then there's Patrick Dempsey. And then Meredith gets on Mr. Lavangi's case because she was able to offer treatments for spinal pain while Izzy was struggling to find the answer. And Miranda Bailey is not impressed. So she follows Derek to the elevator. And I'm really conflicted about this scene. I see how Miranda is defensive of the other interns and she doesn't see that Meredith isn't being treated as a favorite. But I don't know whether her... threat was justified. Like, I think it's good in the aspect that it would prevent special treatment. I see that you wrote down the exact same question.
I literally wrote, like, do you think Bailey is justified when she talks to Derek in the elevator?
It's such a sticky situation. And I wanted to know what you thought because I honestly don't know.
Oh,
like, I just know that Derek in this moment, like, and throughout the episode didn't handle it very well. But I mean, like, I can get, like, wanting to protect your interns because they're also working very hard and you're afraid of special treatment. But also, like, if it's not affecting, like, any fairness, like, it's is it necessarily fair to put Meredith at a disadvantage and target her unnecessarily?
Yeah. It's one of those things I was also on the fence where I think Bailey's kind of going hard at it, being overly upset about it. But also, I can kind of see where she's coming from. Like, she's just trying to defend her other interns and their learning, which is, like, a good resident. And also, I think Bailey views Derek and Preston kind of in the same vein as each other, as well as, like, other surgeons that she's encountered in her life, like Ellis Gray and this kind of thing, where they were so confident in themselves that so I think Bailey's just worried that they're not taking it and Derek's not taking it as serious as he should.
I can see that concern, yeah. I think she just doesn't know enough about the situation to be properly assess whether favoritism is going on or not. This is a situation where they probably just should have been reported, like, by Derek and Meredith to the upper channel sooner, and it wouldn't put Bailey in a tough situation, because it is also unfair to Bailey. Like, how does she manage the situation? I don't know. It's just a whole tangly mess, and I guess that just describes Grey's Anatomy as a whole.
Also, let's not forget how Bailey brought herself, though, into this whole tangly mess by inviting herself to a party.
Yes, that's true. That is true.
She didn't find out about their relationship on hospital grounds. It's not like she found them canoodling
in an old home. The daughter of Mr. Levant, she ends up pulling Meredith aside to ask her to discuss brain surgery to her father. She wants a more invasive procedure and to help with the symptoms, even though her father is afraid, and she wants her dad to be able to be at her wedding. And this is a moment where you can tell Meredith's experience with her mother really helps her connect with the family of sick patients, because she can really put herself in the shoes. She knows what she would do for her mother. So in the hallway, Meredith asks Derek if Mr. Levant is a good candidate for DBS, which is deep brain stimulation. And Derek sees Bailey, and so he reacts so badly. I get the lecture about it's not our place to push him into brain surgery. Then when she says okay, he just jumps on her and kicks her off the case for just asking a question about helping the patient. No. But I think Bailey is also out of line, because her bias against Meredith is now negatively interfering with the treatment of a patient.
I totally agree along that vein. Like, Derek definitely handled that situation wrong, and so did Bailey. Although I did quite like Derek's jab at the end of that conversation, where he's obviously, like, I think Derek, after yelling at Meredith, goes, that was a bonehead move. And he's like, I know I only did that because Bailey was standing right there. So he looks right at Bailey and he says, you know they call you the Nazi.
And she's just like, yeah, no, I don't care. I am Bailey. I am not apologizing for being myself. That's not her words. I'm putting words in Bailey's mouth. He pages Meredith when he asks Mr. Levanche about the operation. And poor Meredith is just attached to a freaking yo-yo and is getting yanked back and forth. Like, you're off the case. You're on the case. The stupid question. Oh, I'm going to do it for you. Like, come on, Derek. Like, when the daughter and Derek leave, I do like the parting words Meredith has for the patient at 2320. She isn't being pushy, but she's making him think, which obviously works because he agrees to the procedure.
Yeah, she's just letting him know, like, it's your daughter's life as well. And obviously, she can see that his daughter has put her life kind of on hold to help with her dad. And Meredith, like you said, can see that reflected in how she is with her mom and, like, being at the beck and call, essentially, of the nursing home that Ellis is in.
Mm-hmm. And I want to give Meredith a round of applause for her conduct in the operating room. She is kind and understanding and knows that there is more to the medical profession than just cutting. So she stays in front of the patient to be supportive for him. And I love that moment when Mr. Levange is able to perform the hand motions.
Oh, I do too. it made me like almost well up because it was just like, you're just so happy for him and you can see that. And it's like, you can just imagine, it's like, you might have another couple good years of motor function.
Yeah, it's a gift like no other. I also really like that Meredith stands up to Derek when they're talking, taking the patient to post-op, which isn't something they'd be doing, but we all know that by now. I love the, sorry I called you a jackass.
Yes.
that part got me. You're like, I did. Twice. And they've resolved it quite well in the end. Like, it's a really heavy Meredare episode, but I'm never going to complain about that.
No. Yeah, absolutely not. Especially these, like, foundational beginning seasons of Meredare.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Shall we move on to Christina?
Sure. Yang sounds good. So, let's talk about the Yang and Burke hookup.
Hypocritical?
Yeah, that's pretty much what my notes. I have two comments about this scene. One, Christina is a hypocrite for the way she treated Meredith when she found out about Meredare, especially when later in this episode, she's already calling in special favors with Burke. Two, I kind of love the way she brushes him off. That was some, what's a nice way of saying big dick energy?
No, I don't know.
Yeah, it was some big dick energy. At this point in Grey's Anatomy, Burke definitely has more emotional depth and a much higher EQ than Christina, for sure. But I still gotta respect the way Christina plays the game.
Yeah, Christina, she's in charge. She's definitely in charge of the situation and the relationship, or non-relationship at this moment, I guess.
Yeah, even though he is higher ranked in the job, she's still playing the cards close to her chest and refusing to talk about, she's kind of keeping on to the power. And she's playing games, for sure. She's absolutely playing games. And then Meredith and Yang are talking in the intern locker room. And I want your opinion. Would you rather have a friend that would comfort you and reduce your anxiety, or one who gives it to you straight like Christina?
One who gives it to me straight.
Yeah, I'd personally rather have the one who gives it to me straight. Like, my best friend Kasia is like that. And it is appreciated, even if it's something that, like, I really don't want to hear. But it does give you an opportunity to see a situation more clearly. So
don't get me wrong. I love being coddled sometimes. But I also think it's good to hear.
I probably won't make the correct decision. So Yang got onto Annie's case because of Burke. Wink, wink. Hello. And is interviewing the mother.
So out of line.
Oh, yes. Thank God I'm not the only one who noticed that. At one point, she tells the mother that she should have gotten help sooner and walks away. Talk about, like, make the mother feel like shit when her daughter's already in the hospital, most likely going to die.
Yeah, I was kind of like, at this point, I'm like, what was the point of worming your way onto this case just to, like, give horrible, horrible, I guess it's not bedside manner if it's to the patient's family. I don't know what it, but, like, to give horrible service.
Yeah.
And, like, human relations stuff.
Yeah, like I said earlier, at this point in this series, Christina has pretty low emotional intelligence.
Yeah. I find that that really takes a flip, or more of a flip, after her ectopic. I can't even say
ectopic
the word.
Pregnancy.
Ectopic pregnancy.
I find
loss.
The switch a lot more like, especially, like, the most major switch, I think, for me is after she loses out on Chief Resident.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you see her actually start to become a teacher. Like, when she's a fellow.
Yes.
And she gets to work with what's his face? God, how am I forgetting his name? Old guy who has a heart attack in surgery. Oh man. I mean, we'll get there at some point, but that's the biggest switch.
After the plane crash? It takes you all the way till after the plane crash?
Oh yeah. The biggest switch in merit, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's a biggest switch in her, but I don't think that's the first time you see, like,
No.
real start of her emotional intelligence.
She definitely has, like, emotional growth, like, well before that point.
but like her biggest change, like she's always been a gunner up to that point. Mm-hmm. And she's like, I don't care who I have to cut down out of my way, I will cut you down. And it's not until like, I think after she learns a different way that she's like, oh, I'm not always right. And I should maybe be a better teacher.
This is true.
Man, we jumped really far ahead.
But, or like after, what's his name? Oldman's husband dies.
I can't wait to get to some of these episodes. I mean, I have so many things I want to say, but I know that we'll just like run for like 2 hours if like I continue on a tangent about these things. So anyways, I do find it funny though at the lunch table that Alex makes the comment about Burke wanting to get into Christina's scrubs.
Yes.
Because he points out the favoritism of Christina that she happens to dismiss when Meredith talks about it. Christina is definitely a hypocrite this episode. She gets so dismissive of other people's mm-hmm. problems.
Like, I think she just can't fathom if, like, she wouldn't do something, how somebody else could do that thing. Like, she's like, well, I wouldn't handle it this way, so how could you handle it this way?
And I like that later Burke calls out his own favoritism and tells Christina it won't happen anymore and is very direct with her. But Yang almost seems to be gaslighting him, or is it just me? Like, I can see...
Oh, yeah, she's like... What favoritism? You made me hold a tumor for 8 hours.
Yeah. Like, you know, he put you on the case that you asked him to put on.
Yeah, it's not his fault it backfired on you.
Are you ready to talk about Alex?
I am.
Okay, so Alex is an absolute weasel, the way he gets onto Annie's case. He manipulated the patient in order to get onto it when... It's pretty well summarized, I think, by the other interns at 7:10 when Izzy says, have you seen Alex like that? He actually seemed sincere. And Meredith's response, seemed, being the operative word.
Yes. Alex will do anything to get ahead, kind of in the way sometimes Christina is, but he uses his, like, flirtation and schmoozing and, like, cool guy charm to try to worm his way into things.
Yeah, I think Christine is literally a shark. Like they say, she's a shark. And Alex is just kind of a douchebag.
He's sneakier.
He's a little bit of a weasel. Like he'll grab you by the throat and latch on.
And like, I just feel really bad because not only like jumping right to the MRI, was it a CAT scan? I don't know. The scan.
The CT.
Not only did, but like he made her feel before that like she was like a beautiful woman for like a second. And she mentioned that. He made her feel valued, which like isn't always a, but if you're gonna play the weasel role and pretend that way and to make somebody feel valued, continue it through the whole way through. Like, don't, or like, just be genuine. You could literally just treat somebody like that. And instead, he decides to make horrible comments when the other doctor or nurse or radiologist or whatever that comes in, he's like, whoa, would you look at that? Like, he's not even talking about her. He's just like, that's a huge tumor.
And he's like, oh, the poor woman. Like, and he's feeling empathy for her, which is what Alex should be feeling. Empathy, not judgment. I do make comments. I go off on this in the end. Just give me a moment and I will go off. But so this is exactly why you do not speak ill of a patient, even behind their back, even if you think they will never hear you. Okay? Never talk shit about a patient. Again, this cycles back to what Shelby and I discussed last episode about the importance of having trust between the doctor and the patient. And I wanted to talk about something separate from the episode, but there was actually an incident where a patient secretly recorded her surgeons while she was under. A 44-year-old Ethel Easter had a confrontational interaction with her surgeon while being at a consult for her hiatal hernia. Oh my god, I can't speak. Hiatal hernia, I can't speak today. Her hernia, okay? Okay, and a hiatal... I think I'm saying it right. Hiatal hernia is when the stomach pushes up into the chest through an opening called the hiatus in the diaphragm. As you can imagine, this can be quite painful. And so Easter was very dismayed that she had to wait 2 months for surgery and ended up in an argument with the surgeon because he told her that she had to wait like everybody else. When she got the same response from her family doctor, she came up with a plan. And guys, take this with a grain of salt, whether you side with the doctors or the patient. Let's not forget what we talked about before. Women, especially Black women, have their pain taken less seriously by medical professionals, which is wrong. So we don't know her pain. We don't know specific details. So we can't be in a position to judge whether her anger was justified and whether someone with the same pain who was in any other class would have been bumped up sooner. So there's certain details we don't know that we can't make judgments on. But anyways, she decided to hide an audio recorder the size of a USB drive in her braided hair extensions before she went into surgery. When she was sedated, the surgeon told the other doctors about the argument and said, "She's a handful. She had some choice words for us in the clinic when we didn't book her case in 2 weeks. She said, 'I'm going to call a lawyer and file a complaint.' That doesn't seem like the thing to say to a person who's doing your surgery." In my opinion, in my very personal opinion, and that first part wasn't horrible, just telling your coworkers what happened. But the last part crosses a line into a threat a bit for me. I don't know.
Yeah, it makes it sound like definitely if this goes to court or if it did go to court, like that could definitely be taken as don't talk back to your surgeon because we hold your life in our hands. And whoops, you never know what we might do.
Well, and especially because they knew she had a penicillin allergy going into the surgery. And they kind of seemed to talk about it a little bit carelessly. And then she had an allergic reaction to penicillin after the surgery. And that's not all. That's not all. Like, this wasn't bad. But it's the last part, like what they said, that was terrible. They started making fun of her belly button and saying, "I feel sorry for her husband," in regards to her personality. They also referred to her as Precious, which Easter felt was a reference to the 2009 movie. I think we saw a little bit of it. And it's about an overweight African-American teenager who is abused in her childhood. This happened to be at the University of Texas Health Science Center in Houston. Now, do we ever think that this woman is going to be trusting doctors again? Whether she was rude to them or not, we don't know the situation. When you're in a professional setting, you have to be professional.
Yeah, and it's situations like that, and it's situations like with what Alex said to Annie behind her back, and she heard, no wonder she didn't want to go into surgery. She was already terrified of hospitals. That's why she waited so long to come in. And do you think this gave her much more trust in the people she was supposed to leave her tumor and her life in the hands of? No.
And not that it's ever any excuse to treat a healthcare professional like crap. And I know Annie didn't do this. Annie was a very, very sweet lady. But even working as a medical receptionist, like, I've been yelled at for patients for things that are completely out of my control, not my fault at all. Like, I've been screamed at a lady who wanted her lab results, and I'm like, the lab technician hasn't actually sent them yet, and she screamed at me that it's my fault, and, like, she has an infection. Like, you know what? They're just things you have to deal with in the medical professional. Like, I didn't yell at her and get mad because I knew she was scared and in pain. And when people are scared and in pain, they tend to react more aggressively usually than they do. So yeah, I don't know the situation when she got in the argument with the surgeon in this case I talked about. But I do know that she was in pain, and maybe that wasn't her normal attitude. I don't know. Either way, you can't be talking about your patient behind their back unprofessionally.
If you're going to talk about your patient behind their back, be like, "I have the sweetest patient. She made me laugh a lot today." That's a good thing you can say.
Yeah.
Other than that, you shouldn't be discussing it. Their case, because of HIPAA regulations, which we've talked in depth about in previous episodes. And also, just like for cases like this.
You never know what's going to get back to them, you know? You never know who's listening. You got to be careful. You got to be so, so careful. Back to our episode. Annie asks Alex not to be in her surgery. And I'm really proud of Annie for standing up for herself, like with her tumor, refusing to seek help and strongly considering forgoing the surgery, knowing she will die. This woman has been defeated for a while. Like, she's been down on herself and feeling hopeless. So it takes a lot of strength to stand up for yourself, especially in that situation. And I loved the little quip, "That's how I live with myself." And you could see that hit Alex like a slap in the face. It was fantastic. So George ended up replacing Alex on that case.
By the way, when George replaces Alex, I have notes that his bedside manner is fantastic. Well, George always is a fantastic doctor in terms of bedside manner and communication with his patients. Mm-hmm. But literally, and like, he asks her a question, like, "Why did you leave it that long?" Just curiously. And he didn't have a mean tone or negative, or it didn't, he wasn't condescending about it in any which way. And Annie was more than willing to answer his question. She's like, "You know, nobody's actually asked me that."
I really feel like I'd want George as my surgical intern if I was a patient. And he definitely has the best bedside manner out of all the interns. Like, yes, Izzy can be kind, but she's also a lot more judgmental than George. And I like that he talked to her like a person instead of just talking about her. And just being kind and asking the right questions, he learned more about why the patient is afraid of doctors and why the tumor got bad. Like, and the other interns were so focused on judging her and feeling superior that they never paused for a goddamn moment to have empathy and try to understand her like George did. So, round of applause for Georgie. Georgie McGeorge.
Georgie is just, like, all around sweetheart boy next door this episode.
I would honestly just be so happy to have George as my best friend. You know, can I just be friends with George, like, minus the bus? Sorry, that's too soon. I'm sorry. That's too soon.
I saw a TikTok, speaking of the bus, sorry, today, where this girl was making her boyfriend watch, like, Grey's Anatomy all the way through for the first time, and she recorded him as he was watching the part where George is drawing the double 07 on Meredith's hand, and she's realizing, and the rest of the audience is realizing, that's George. And his face, this guy is like a grown ass man curled in like a fetal position, bald, just staring shocked at the TV, and he's like, "George."
I know. My good friend Chris finally started watching Grey's Anatomy after, like, much prodding for me. And he fell in love with the show he's watching with his girlfriend. And he's telling me about how much he likes George. And George does remind me of my friend Chris.
Oh, so much. And
I didn't give him any spoilers, but a little piece of me inside shriveled up. And I'm like, oh, no, Chris is in for some heartbreak.
So sorry, Chris, if you're listening to this. Yeah. Spoiler!
Oh god. Well, hopefully he got to the bus scene already. Hopefully he's already been shattered into a million pieces, so I don't have to do it for him. Anyway, sorry, we jumped ahead a little bit. Okay. So Izzy doesn't have a huge role in this episode, but I'm just gonna...
But yet she's playing everybody's role.
I know.
She's taking care of like an entire floor by herself. I'm like, there has to be more people helping her.
And because Alex's page is dead, and she's essentially doing everything herself. And while in the gallery, we get a little bit more of a glimpse at the Alex and Meredith friendship. And I have to say, this is one of my favorite duos in the series, like in the entire Grey's Anatomy series as a whole, because they're able to see so clearly through each other's bullshit. And then Alex's jealousy of Izzy is out of this world when he hears about the sternotomy. But it's his own fault for being careless. Like, the second time this episode, he was careless. First, he pressed the microphone button. Second, he forgot to replace the battery. Even though earlier in this episode, when he hit the button, he noticed the battery was low.
Also, regardless of whether his pager was dead or not, and whether he noticed it or not, why is he sitting in a gallery watching this surgery when he was assigned with Izzy to this floor to take care of the patients? Like, he's literally shirking his responsibilities that Bailey handed upon him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So when Annie's artery wall blows, Alex goes to run to get the blood himself. And I don't know why he thought he'd be faster than the lady who was already running with the blood, but I guess he wanted to be a hero. But obviously that didn't work, and it didn't matter because the patient died before he even got there.
Do you remember about Amy? Yeah, I just had to say, like, basically this episode, Alex is really petty and pouty.
That's like Alex season one.
Yeah, leaving Izzy to do everything. Like I said, Izzy probably could have delegated to a few more nurses. But we see she tried with nurse Tyler. She tried to ask him to do something. He's like, sorry, I'm out. This is like what we have going on. The resident left for the night. So obviously, like, they're just shorthanded, I guess.
Yeah. And let's talk about Izzy for a moment. Because, I mean, we'll talk about it briefly because she really only has one big moment with episode two, where she does a sternotomy for the first time by herself. He has a clot as the result of a post-op complication, and Izzy is the only doctor that's able to react in time. So even if Alex had his pager on, he probably wouldn't have gotten there in time anyway, so I don't get why he's making such a big fuss. But this is her first time cracking a chest, and she doesn't even have a doctor to supervise her. So she's very, very lucky in this situation to have an experienced nurse there to guide her and walk her through it. Just shout out to our nurses. Nurses are so underrated. We need our nurses so badly, and they always come through.
Also, like, I wanted to say in this situation, despite how nervous she was, she still handled the room pretty well. Like, she was nervous and thinking about things, but she knew, get the patient's wife out. Like, she was in control of that situation. And she also realized her boundaries and steps. Like, she knew that she wasn't experienced in that field, so she took directions and instructions from the most senior nurse there who was helping her out, because doctors and nurses should be doing it. Shouldn't be like a power dynamic thing. Izzy allowed basically a nurse to act as her, like,
as we've talked about on previous episodes, Shelby's even mentioned, it's not like in Grey's Anatomy where the doctors and the nurses are on different rankings. They're a team and they have different jobs and different duties, but overall they're equals on a team. So that's something that Grey's Anatomy gets wrong. So that's actually something I really like about this scene, is because, I mean, Izzy wasn't superior to the nurse. She just had separate medical schooling, so she was allowed to perform it. But it doesn't mean that she was any higher ranked than that nurse. And that's why that nurse was calling the shots and telling Izzy what to do.
I also think, though, this does say something about Izzy's character in the show, because had it been Alex in that room, he probably would have been brushing off that nurse, because he would have felt that she was insulting his education or abilities or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like, he would have acted like he was higher up, as we've seen in, like, the first episode when he calls Meredith a nurse and he's basically talking down.
Yeah, he looks down on nurses. And then I had a couple good chuckles when it came to Izzy. Like, when she walked into the operating room and said, I opened a sternotomy bedside, and everybody just, like, turned and looked at her like, what?
Yes.
And then when she screamed.
Yeah, Alex. I wrote, I love Izzy, like, blowing up on Alex and just, like, beating on him. And, like, she's like, you're a horrible, horrible, hateful person. Like, I hate you. You hateful man. And she, like, smashes his pager on the floor and like, stomps on it. What's even funnier is that Derek, he's like, oh, never a dull moment. Like, Derek doesn't care. He doesn't, like, be like, you guys are professionals, stop that. He's like, oh, look at.
Yeah, I think everybody in the OR room kind of collectively agreed that Alex deserved that. Oh, man. To finish off, should we talk about, I think I have, like, only a couple notes on George other than what we talked about. But it's mainly just, like, his thing for Meredith, just kind of closing off with that. Like, when they're doing rounds in the beginning for Mr. Harper, I was chuckling to myself when George is stealing looks at Meredith. Like, I think we've all done that when we've had a crush, though, where you're like, I'm gonna sneakily look at them, see what they're doing, whatever I can. Like, when I first met my boyfriend Kenny. Like, we played on the same hockey team in high school. Yes, I know. We're Canadian. And I would sneak look at him during drills. Like, I did the drill, and then, like, the rest of the team's finishing my drill, and I was like, just watch, like, him, and I was trying to be sneaky about it. But you know what? Whatever. Everybody does it. And if you say you've never done this, you are a liar. I don't believe you for a second. Everybody's done what George has done in this episode. George is easily the most relatable character. And then he's trying to convince Izzy that he doesn't have a thing for Meredith, and she does not believe it at all. I just love how she kind of just, like, brushes him off. It's like, sure you don't, George. Like, in the beginning, like, yeah. Sure you don't
Everybody, have a thing for George. Literally every single person knows that George has a crush on Meredith, except for Meredith. Because even, like, Alex passes him in the hall, and he's like, give it up, dude. She's seeing somebody. And George is like, no, she isn't. I'm living with her. I don't know if she's seeing somebody. Like, he's very flustered about it.
Well, and then you see it, like, get in his head in the very end when he finally goes to make his move, and she's not there. And you could tell by the look on his face that he knows she's with another man.
Also by, like, how nervous he is at lunch when he's, like, all stuttery. And he's, like, trying to ask her out for drinks. And he's like, well, everybody can come, you know, like, let's go drink, like, alcohol. Like,
I know. I always cringe laugh at that scene when he's, like, trying to ask her out. And he just, like, asks out the whole group. And, like, it's so awkward. He's so cute. And then as soon as Meredith leaves, everybody at the table is just like, oh,
but George is still adorable.
I know.
All right. Should we do our favorites?
Yeah. So we're going to do it a little different this week. We're going to pick our person. So who's our person? And then we're also going to choose someone who's on Scut because they were terrible this episode. Do we want to pick our person first or choose who's on Scut?
Let's pick our person first.
Okay. My person. Oh, God. I didn't think that. Okay. My person this week, I got it. As cute as George is, I'm going to give it to Meredith. Because even though she was in a tough personal situation, I think she handled Bailey and Derek very well. Like, she stood up for herself to Derek when he was being unfair. But at the same time, she, even though Bailey was being unreasonable with her, she was being reasonable with Bailey. And she still made an important connection with the patient's family and ended up getting him the treatment that the patient really actually needed. And she was very, very good medically as well in the operating room. So I'm going to give it this week to Meredith.
All right. Because I agree with you, like, I was also going to pick Meredith, but I agree with all your points. So just to not be boring, I'm going to pick a different person. So we have two people this episode, and I'm actually going to pick Izzy. This episode.
Yeah.
Because she does a procedure herself, which is badass. Also, she's, like, basically taking care. Like, let's not forget, literally the nurse says the resident went home for the night. So as an intern, she's basically managing an entire floor. She's a little frazzled, but she's getting it done while all the other surgeons are busy. And, like, Alex is shirking his responsibility. So I'm going to give it to Izzy. Plus, she's, like, hilarious this episode. And... not afraid to tell Alex to shove it when he needs it.
And then I think it's pretty obvious who we'd both put on Scut this episode. Should we say it on the count of three?
Yeah.
One, two, three. Alex. Yeah. Yeah. Well, do we even have to explain how shitty he was this episode?
Alex gets Scut. And then, like, Bailey somewhat. Bailey gets a bedpan.
A bedpan? He gets a bedpan.
One bedpan.
One Alex out of five bedpans.
Yeah.
One out of five bedpans. Oh, God. Yeah, that's all my comments this episode.
Yeah, that's all I have for this episode, too. It was a pretty good episode. I really actually enjoyed watching this episode. I think it was a lot less medically dense and, like, actual social and economic, like, issues present in today's society dense, which is kind of nice because it was, like, just light and fluffy this episode felt like there were some issues, but for the most part it was, like, a lot more humorous than some of the episodes we see this season.
And to our listeners, please subscribe and rate us on all social media platforms. And if you have any medical or show questions about this episode or future episodes, or you just have any comments you want to send us or jokes you want to send in, email them to us, message us on our Facebook page. Our email is pickmechoosemepodcastme@gmail.com. We're available on Instagram, also all social media platforms. You know where to find us by now, hopefully. Hopefully, maybe you don't, actually. I don't know.
Well, we'd love to hear from you. Like you said, Haley said, you can comment on our Instagram or Facebook, send us an email. We'd love to have your comments read out loud in the podcast, like, especially if you have, like, a good Grey's moment that's, like, your all-time favorite. Like, if you see something this episode and you're like, I just must speak about how much I love this, let us know.
And also, we have such a diverse group of listeners. Like, Canadians are only a small part of our listeners. Like, we have way more people from all sorts of countries. And we want to hear what your healthcare system is there. We're more familiar with North America, the U.S. Medicare system, the Canadian medical system. I want to know what it's like in your country. Is things different? Is it the same? Do you know? I don't know. Email us, message us, reach out to us. But until then, we want you to pick me, choose me, podcast me, because it is a beautiful day to podcast.